702. News and current affairs.
Olani Dube is political analyst at Zubeira Institute for Research and Development. Joins me now. Olani, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Let me humble myself to you as well as for the listeners.
Much appreciated, sir.
Thanks.
Are we any closer to any resolution around the Marikana massacre 10 years later?
Look, I think let's problematize your question by asking the value of a native's life in South Africa. Because we need to contextualize the issue of Marikana. And we have to look back the life that characterized the valueless life of a South African native, you know. We start from colonialism, we go to apartheid, and then now we are here post-1994. And when you look at all the massacres that have happened and the number of deaths and the number of people who keep on crying and do commemoration of this and that, are not Indians, are not colored people, are not whites, but are the South African natives. And so I think the most important question is why the South African natives are the sacrificial lamb in this country. That's the most important question. Because if you are going to look at massacre at Marikana, it's like you are forgetting that last year it was Phoenix massacre, you know, and prior. The so-called the Marikana massacre. You remember that we have a number of people who died in Boy Bato, you know, during the 80s. And also there are individual pockets of people who fought for this country, like Umamunoktula Ntshangas. You go to Kolobeni, you find Bazuga and the others who were killed there. And when you look at the commonality or the common denominator, what is happening at Northern KwaZulu-Natal, Umamunjangas, what was happening at Marikana in Northwest, what was happening at Kolobeni in the Eastern Cape, and also you go to the Rand Revolt. You find that it comes to a very simple conclusion that the life of a South African native here in South Africa is worthless. And so, in conclusion, a life of a slave, it matters less. And so, we are the slaves. Hence, our lives in South Africa are of no value. Because in 2 weeks' time, you might hear that more than 10 people were killed in a tavern, or more than people were killed somewhere. And as we speak, there were 3 bodies that are still down there in that mine, you know. And so, look, we can be afraid as much as we want, but the fact of the matter is, we need not to be sad. We have to understand that in the power matrix, certain lives will be sacrificed. Possibly voluntary, we decided that our lives are the ones who are supposed to be voluntary. Be sacrificed.
I suppose I understand the meta narrative. I understand the big issue that you raise. But if you don't mind, I really would like to focus on the Marikana situation. Given the fact that it's 10 years on, we are yet to see somebody go to court. We are yet to see somebody charged for the deaths of people whom we saw right in front of our very eyes. And you're correct to point to various massacres, deaths throughout our very recent history. I mean, I still get haunted by the issue of Andries Tatane, who died right before our very eyes at the hand of our police. And again, there was nobody who died. And perhaps we could, and I'm happy that you do, pull that thread out and and analyze it for me, but I would like to come back to Marikana specifically and say, what are the issues that are mitigation or the reason for not getting to some sort of resolution that we can say there walks Lady Justice and the people of Marikana have received some form of that justice? What are the issues, particularly as it pertains to the Marikana issue? And if looking at the meta-narrative is going to help us understand that Marikana issue a little bit more, I'm happy that you go there. But why is it that we have not been able to find resolution for Marikana 10 years later?
You know, post-1994, we thought that the government is the government that is got compassion, a kind government, because it's a democratic government. Is the government for the people, by the people. And, you know, there was an issue of life estimate. More than 100 and something people at the hands of our government died. Not even a single person is behind bars, you know. And, you know, that when you come to the issue of Marikana, you know, that's why I'm saying these things are interrelated, you know. You can't simply extrapolate it and try to have an analysis without looking at the bad view of the life of a native in South Africa. But look, the issue of Marikana is a simple one. No one will be ever, or no one will be ever held accountable, because the people who were killed there are the people who got no value in the metrics of the South African power politics. As we speak to you and I, there are people, more than 3,000 people, who are at the belly of this earth. The same people, about 2 weeks, 2 months back, they were complaining, saying, can we have a rise of 1,000 so that we can sustain our livelihoods, you know? The problem that we have in South Africa for the lives of people not to be accountable, for the lives of the South African natives to be worthless, for the lives of those people who were killed in Marikana not to have a value and to not to find justice, because as I'm saying, you'll never find justice on the side of people whose lives are worthless. You'll never find, you know, a slave has got no protection. The only thing that the slave must do is to provide labor. When he's not providing labor, he must be whipped and be lynched, or he must be killed. You know, you don't have a right if you are a slave. And so the life of those people who are killed in Marikana is based on the fact that our South African economy, or as well as our South African political power metrics, is rendering you and I that justice must not be on our side. And so how much more when those slaves, they stood up and said to their bosses, please give something also so that we can have something for our families. And the slave master said, you know what, I'm going to lead you. You're not going to benefit anything. They were killed. And no one ever took any responsibility, as we speak even today. And the person who was like seen as a culprit, who even said, yes, I'm willing to pay. Remember what Sir Ramaphosa said, something that was very painful, to say, I'll donate R2,000 for the burial of each and every body of a dead person. Even today, when you look at the discourse, is about reparations, that people must be compensated. You can't compensate justice. Justice, you can't put money in that equation of justice. Justice is beyond monetary value. It's about humanity, it's about fairness, it's about perpetrators going behind jail. If not going behind jail, they must pay the highest price. But because you and I and the other listeners who are the South African natives, we are powerless economically and politically. We never see justice. And so those people in Marikana and their families who are crying even today, they will never see justice. The only thing that they will be given are the houses and other things to pacify them. It's simple as that.
It's a very sad picture that you draw, Xolani. So, I mean, that's it?
That's it. That's it. People were killed in Longbatown. That's it. People were killed in Phoenix. Our president went there. He's on record to see praising people who were protecting their properties. He's on record. And people who were protecting their properties are the Indians and the whites, are the people who form part of the ruling class in our country. And people who have nothing were killed, you know. Same thing at Life Estate Domain. Understand this thing. Same thing at Life Estate Domain. People were crying, but not even a single person is behind that. We went to TRC. People were crying, black people. No one went behind that. You know, the journalists, even today, you can hear, you can see the adverts on in news when he was saying the blood of F.W. de Klerk. I mean, the hand of F.W. de Klerk is dripping the blood of his father, you know. And so there is no justice for a slave. That's the fact of the matter.
I suppose another person could argue and say that, yeah, Xolani is correct in his overall narrative, but each and every one of those stories still needs to be unpacked of its unique variables, of its unique issues, right? And I suppose,
you know what the problem? Sorry, can I interject? You know, you can't extrapolate these things. They are interconnected because we inherited systems and structures that are not protecting the historically colonized, the historically dispossessed, and the historically dehumanized. The most important thing for us is to disrupt the systems and structures that make you and I to speak English, that make you and I to feel inferior, that make you and I our lives to be of no value, that make you and I to be vulnerable when it comes to the South African justice. We need to change that. That's
right.
I hear that.
But I'm still wanting to talk about Marikana. I think you've laid the foundation very, very powerfully and very strongly to say that this is a systemic issue that has its genesis in imperialism, in colonialism, in apartheid, and that the system is such that it is pitted against those who are the generations.
It's African natives. Let us be honest. It's not against
Can I ask the question, Xolani?
Yeah, be honest. You know, don't be scared.
You know, Xolani, you know what, my brother? I think if you let me conduct the interview, right? So that I can extract from you as an expert the information that I need for this conversation. Or we could agree that I'm going to let you have your monologue and make your speech, and then I can move on and speak to the. But you, what I'm trying to get from you, and there's no denial and there's no fear here, right? I'm trying to understand that after your fatalistic description of what happened in Marikana, that I do not actually disagree with. What do we do? What do we do with the fact that justice has not been afforded the people who were the victims of what happened in Marikana? What do we do in the framework of the laws, the constitution that we have at the moment? What do we do? Because I cannot accept that we simply throw our hands in the air and walk away from this issue. So while I hear your meta-narrative, the systemic problems that we have, the connectedness of the various tragedies that you've already spoken of, and I agree with you, the conversation tonight is about Marikana. And I hear what you're saying about the fact that these issues are interconnected. Please don't insult me by suggesting that I'm afraid to ask a question. I do this on a daily basis. I know what I'm doing here. So please don't say to me I'm afraid. I am asking you a very simple question. That in the framework of what we have right now, the constitution that we have, the laws that we have, our ability to apply them or not, what do we do for the people of Marikana, both those who died on the day, the 34, and those who died prior to that, the 10? What do we do given the unique circumstances of that particular issue? And I imagine that as systematically connected as all of these issues are, each of them have unique issues that we can look to instead of simply saying, ah, that's it, slaves, black people, and then we shut the book. That cannot give hope to our people.
You know, Francis Scott, last year I gave a lecture on Marikana, you know. The laws, as I'm saying, we had the Falun Commission looking at Marikana. What happened after that? Was there justice? There was no justice. Through Falun Commission, there was no justice at all. Today, people in Marikana, widows, our the so-called president, when it was Mandela's funeral, he promised us all in front of the world that he would go to Marikana and apologize. So apologize for what? He never went there. He's the president of the country.
What do you think he should have apologized for?
I don't know. That's what he said. He said he would go there to Marikana to apologize. And then we said, okay, let's wait. What is he going to apologize for? And because there was suspicion that he was involved. But look, he never went there even today. That's what I'm trying to give it to you, that the condemned of this country, they don't have a right. If you and I, we sit here and we say we want to use constitution, when there was a commission that was there instituted to find the perpetrators, and that commission said no one has been found as a perpetrator.
So what do we do? What do we do? Because
that's why I'm saying to you that the issue of Marikana gave us a bigger lesson to say for justice to be served in this country, we need to redefine or we need to do away with the systems and structures that we inherited from the apartheid. The system that will talk to us all as South Africans equally.
And how do we do that?
That's the problem that we have as fear. It's a very simple one. First and foremost, we need to review this constitution because this is a devil's Bible that we have. You know, we need to review it and look at it because you know it that from its inception, we as South Africans, we were never consulted. It was an imposed devil's Bible on us. In halls, under the trees, we never discuss this thing. That's why even today, when you look at it, some of the people, they get amazed to say, I never thought that this constitution can be against my culture. This constitution can be against my social upward mobility. This constitution can be against the issue of land and this and that and this. You get them. And so that's why I'm saying we need, as a South African, we have a serious work that we need to put everything aside and go through hell of saying, laboriously, let's work on what we want to see this country in 20 years to come. Because the talks that we always have are the talks on top of a whole, but we are talking over a paper.
All right. Let me ask this, because I think now we're getting somewhere. So you are calling for a rehaul of the Constitution. Help me understand which aspects of the Constitution would address the lack of justice that we've seen in the Marikana situation.
That's why I'm saying, you know, that's how we simplify things, you know, to say, if you address this, let's do this. And look, What I'm saying is that South African systems and structures, backed by the constitutions and the laws of this country, you hear what I'm saying, were designed not for us. And so right now, we as South Africans, we need to have a start a conversation. That's why Olokisa and others were saying, can we have an economic CODESA? You know?
Give me an opportunity.
I'm giving an example to address the economic imbalances of the past. But I am saying to me, beyond the issue of economic CODESA, let's go to the issues of constitution. Let's look at the systems and structures that destroy our education, that destroy the potential of the South African natives. Let's look at the system that will simply protect and value the life of people of the South African natives, so that in future when they're killed, we know that there are consequences of those who killed them. And so such kind of a discussion, I can't do it now. But what I can do, I can give you pointers of what must start to happen, so that we remedy the issue of Marikana, we remedy the issue of life estimate. Because here we're talking about people who were killed. You and I, we know it very well that there were no consequences. That's why at this time we're asking ourselves to say, what can we do for justice to happen? And so that's why I'm proposing to you that for justice to happen, let's look at this constitution. Let's look at this system and structure so that they can empower us in future. We don't have this conversation at night. We know that if people are being killed in such numbers, the law naturally can take its course.
So if we were to start that conversation, Tola, where would we start? What would we say? And do I still ask questions about Marikana specifically, or are you still talking about an overhaul of the constitution in general terms? When do we get a chance to ask questions specifically about Marikana outside of the very, very accurate descriptions of the injustice of the other massacres? The reason why I'm wanting to talk about Marikana is because tomorrow marks 10 years since that particular fateful day. And as you and I agree that nothing has happened, now, my dilemma right now in this particular conversation is, do I ask questions that pertain to Marikana specifically, or do I simply talk in general terms about the injustice of the system that you've pointed out already? Give me some guidance.
The problem is we have a commission, you know, and then people say, no. There was a commission, and then the commission, there are some recommendation and verdict, and then others will say, look, Lonmin currently is building houses for the widows. Lonmin is taking kids to school of the people who were killed in Marikana. AMCU is doing something. Matunga is building housing for the widows. There is a trust fund. And others would say there are international NGOs who are doing something in order to make that something is happening for people who were at the receiving end of the Marikana. You know, because it will end up in that particular level. That's my main worry.
Why don't you let it go there if it goes there?
You know why? Because we're not dealing with the root problem of this thing.
What I want to find out, and let me once again reiterate that in principle I agree with you, but I still feel like I'm in the air, in that we haven't focused on anything specific in our conversation. There's no doubt that we need to see justice for what happened at Phoenix. But tonight's conversation is not about Phoenix.
It's not about Phoenix, no.
There's no doubt that we need to have justice for the people at Witbato. But tonight's conversation is not about that. There's no doubt that we need to have justice for the people in Mamelodi on the 21st of November. There's no doubt. And I get what you're saying about the systemic problem that we have. But is it possible that we could look at Marikana given the fact that Marikana is also a microcosm of the systemic problems that you've already explained, and then pick out of the Marikana issue, what are those constitutional amendments or overhauls, whatever term you want to use, that would then bring Marikana a sense of justice? How do I have that conversation in the next few minutes with you?
You know what is frustrating you and I is that, you know, the real perpetrators, of which is a London mining company, London, that changed to Spanish steel waters, they are no longer here. It's a historical problem of extracting the minerals, exploiting the people, do whatever you want, and then you leave the country. And then when people have a problem, you pacify them with housing, with this and that, you know. And so if our conversation is going to say is a commemoration of Marikana, I can go with the commercial analysis, you know, to say, yes, people, we have to look after the widows. We have to do this and that. I can talk about the issues of minerals, the energy complex, people who are owning our mines, who have been doing these things for years. I can speak like all these other academics. But I've decided to say, look, I have to put that thing aside. Let's confront the real devil here, of which this real devil, it has been with us for years. And how do we strangulate it? Because it has been strangulating us. And so the issue of Marikana, you and I, we have to use it as a spark that ignites a bigger discourse on how to redefine the minerals energy complex dominancy and power in South Africa.
And what you said to me was that we need to look at the constitution and overhaul
precisely,
it.
Yes,
right. Now,
yes.
What I'm hoping that the next 13 minutes are going to deliver is, how do we do that? What aspects?
I will give it to you.
So let me ask the question. So what aspects of the Constitution do we overhaul, to what end? What will the process for that be, so that we can be clear in our minds that what Xolani Dube is proposing is not yet another pie-in-the-sky idea filled with a lot of sentiment and emotion, but something that is workable and absolutely practically deliverable. Can we go there?
We can go there.
All right.
Oh, you want me to answer?
Yes.
You now? Okay, look, what is very interesting, because now you want me to overhaul the whole system right now.
Well, I don't want you. I want you to...
I should do that. To remember that you and I, we never had a bill of rights. This is a fact.
Xolani, I'm not disputing the fact. I'm worried about process, because we haven't done anything. For the last almost hour, we have said nothing, you and I, right? And I thought you were saying that what we need to do is we need to look at the Constitution and overhaul that, so that we create a platform where justice can then be experienced by the black native of South Africa.
Yes, that's what I say. We need to overhaul the whole Constitution.
So let's do that.
That's what I said, that we need to change the whole systems and structures. I've been saying that we need to restart, reboot, or reset the whole thing in this country. That's what I've been saying.
Now, what I'm asking you to do is help me with the practicalities of that. Because we've all heard it before. Yeah? The need for an overhaul of the Constitution. We've heard it. We've heard the fundamental systemic issues that you've raised so eloquently, we've heard it. What I'm looking for, and hopefully we'll get it in the next 10 minutes, is what are the practical steps connected perhaps to the Marikana situation that would make us lowly individuals understand where Xolani is driving us to? Practicality. And what exactly that would mean? How would we get involved in that process?
Okay, you know, let me go with this. You know, in the 57th or whatever conference, And even in the past, there was an issue of nationalization of mines. You know?
Yes.
And the state must take over the mines.
Yes.
The communities must be the beneficiaries of those mines, like in Australia, like in any other first world countries. You know? I think, why don't you do that?
All right.
Because if the communities and if the South African citizens, they own these mines, you know it very well that in Australia, when there was the issue of economic crisis, it was the trade unions as well as in German who made it clear that we don't want the pay rise. Because these mining companies in Australia, I mean, these communities in Australia and the miners, they own these mines. And so if the beneficiation is not about the production, but it's about the ownership of mines, I think it will help a lot.
Olani Dube, thank you very much for joining us this evening, political analyst at Zubera Institute for Research and Development.